The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. A red state governor looks at a $1.9 trillion stimulus package.
This is a blue state bailout.
The past catches up with Governor Cuomo.
He's had even less accountability during this crisis because he was foisted on the pedestal by the media as a COVID hero.
Well, Governor Newsom faces a recall election.
Where we had businesses open and closed in California four and five times because of the conflicting metrics of moving the goalposts, indoor dining, outdoor dining, closing down outdoor playgrounds.
And big tech continues to cancel the politically incorrect.
It's a sword persecuting people who believe the truth about human nature.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with a closer look at the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. Media continues to focus on the so-called COVID stimulus payouts to individuals, but Democrats have quietly packed the bill with an unprecedented amount of pork. Headline after headline discusses the numbers for that $1,400 per person cutoff. But in a $1.9 trillion package, that amounts to a small fraction of this bloated cost. Democrats are betting the average American will skip the math part. Media are giving an assist. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, in an op-ed at FoxNews.com, pointed to another glaring defect in the stimulus package. It's heavily weighted in favor of blue states, states like New York and California. Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. You have an op-ed, COVID relief, Pelosi-Schumer plan favors Democrat states. Here's how we fight back. First of all, are Georgia's senators supporting this plan? Because they're both Democrats. We lost both of the runoffs, and that was unfortunate. So you got two Democratic senators. Have you talked to them about this plan?
Well, I haven't talked to them personally. We've been in contact certainly with their offices to let them know the disparity here and how this is per capita are going to get 50% more dollars than our own Georgia citizens would. So there's a lot of inequity in this bill that's favoring states like California and New York. I mean, can you imagine, Hugh, if President Trump, when he was doing these COVID relief packages, or the Republicans when they were in charge, were, you know, letting Georgia or Florida or Texas, you know, have more per capita money than California, New York, and Illinois? I mean, the media and the Democratic politicians would have absolutely been going crazy. And all we want to be treated as fair. I mean, our economy's in great shape. Most of the governors that signed that letter in the same boat, because we had, you know, we did two things. We protected lives and continue to do that against COVID, but also we understand how important it is to protect livelihoods, and that we can't let, you know, a virus or a pandemic or anything else lead us to economic ruin. I mean, the health effects of that from a mental standpoint and others, you know, childhood, early childhood learning and you know, K-12 learning, I mean, it has been really hard on our students. It's been hard on our small business owners. It's adversely affecting minority-owned businesses worse than anybody. And it's unreal that the Democrats would play favorites on a relief package like this. If anything, it ought to be targeted more at those who are out of work or still displaced because of the adverse effects that some industries have had to the pandemic, like airline industry, convention, hospitality, and so on.
Now, Governor, I can't figure out what's in it, because there is in the Wall Street Journal a reference to a bailout for multi-employer pension plans. Well, the biggest multi-employer pension plan that I know of is CalPERS. It's radically underfunded. It's a disaster waiting to happen on the West Coast. Do you have any idea what that refers to? Because if that's a second bucket of money for Chicago and Connecticut and California, blue states and cities that have simply not funded their pension plans, there's another reason not to vote for it.
Well, look, this is exactly what they wanted. I mean, this is what they need, the federal bailout. They just are not in a position to fix decades-long problems here on their own. And that's what's so disappointing. This doesn't have anything to do with helping folks that have been adversely affected from COVID. This is going back and fixing financial problems that states have had because they hadn't made tough choices for over a decade. And this is a blue state bailout, which is, I think, why it's designed like it is. It's unreal that, you know, Georgia senators would support this. I fully expect them to do that. I'm hoping that you have, you know, senators in states that are, you know, Democrats that are, you know, in states like West Virginia, Joe Manchin, or perhaps Montana and others are going to stand up and say, look, I just cannot vote for this disparity. We need to do something that's going to be fair to all Americans. And certainly from my standpoint, it should be fair to all Georgians. I mean, look, we could use, I don't think we need the bailout as big as it is. I'm certainly supportive of targeted things to help those that are still having a hard time when many others are not. But if they're going to do this, they should do it equitably, because we could use that money to help, you know, put more money into broadband access in rural Georgia to help, you know, continue to do great things in our schools and, you know, our healthcare system and other things that, you know, would benefit Georgians and not, you know, more benefit people in New York and California and Illinois in these bailout states.
So, Governor Kemp, the key question is, will Raphael Warnock listen to you? John Ossoff won't. He's got 6 years, but Raphael Warnock has to run in 2022. Have you tried to call him?
Well, we've talked to their offices. I don't think they're going to support it. I mean, maybe they'll have a change of heart if some of the fellow Democrats stand up. I think they owe so much to, you know, to humor and the crowd up there. I just don't see it. But if enough Georgians will get on them and let them know this is going to be a bad vote, I mean, you're going to be putting New Yorkers and Californians in front of Georgians. I couldn't imagine doing that if I was serving in the United States Senate or the United States Congress. But we've stated the plan very clearly. We told them we were going to message on this point because Georgians need to know. I mean, they need to know that we're being treated unfairly, as are, you know, 20-something other states around the country. I think it's really more than that. But there are 21, 22 governors that have signed on, and one Democrat did.
So, Governor, though, have you talked to Raphael Warnock since the special that put him into the Senate?
No, I haven't. We have my chief staff has been talking to his folks. I have talked to Senator Ossoff a time or two, and we've had, you know, good communication with their office, and we'll continue to do that with all our policymakers in D.C., despite what side of the aisle they're on.
For months, New York Governor Mario Cuomo faced difficult questions for the way his state handled the pandemic. And despite recent revelations that his office allegedly hid numbers from the federal government, it appeared the governor would survive the controversy. Then came an allegation of sexual harassment, and then another, and another. Kevin McCullough discussed the latest with Carol Markowitz of the New York Post from AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
What kind of trouble should Andrew Cuomo be in? Is he actually in trouble? And will there be any consequence to his actions?
I wish that the conversation that we were all having would be about the nursing home deaths that he covered up. And I wish that would be what he was getting in trouble for, because I think that's really the huge, huge elephant in the room that is not being ignored. I know you're all over it. I know conservative media is all over it. But look, it seems a little suspect that all the mainstream media outlets have moved on to this new sexual harassment topic, which I'm pretty confident he's going to recover from and move on and probably get a fourth term in New York. Oh. So, you know, I think that it's a little suspicious to me that suddenly the fawning has stopped and they finally want to cover something, but it's not the nursing home death cover up.
Well, and just for everyone's sake that's listening, just compare it to this. The number of people that we know that died from his planned goal of sticking COVID positive patients into nursing homes is somewhere between 15 and 16,000 people. That's roughly eight times the number of people that died on 9/11. And those are the ones that we can, you know, strictly attribute to his policy. There were other people that died that may or may not have been impacted by decisions that he made. We're not even including any of those. We're just talking about just the nursing homes. And yeah, I agree with you. That is significantly more important than the three women that have been mistreated. And yet, at the same time, I think it helps explain a lot about this governor. He just doesn't feel like there's any accountability for his actions almost ever.
That's right. Absolutely. And I think he's had even less accountability during this crisis because he was foisted on the pedestal by the media as a COVID hero. And I think we're seeing the results of that. You know, New York had more deaths per capita than any other state in the country. New York, New Jersey kind of swapped first place on that. And it really wasn't the success story that it was painted in the media. He wrote a book and made himself a poster during the summer when numbers were low, and then numbers went higher than ever in the fall and winter in New York. So what did we win? What did we win by the lockdowns that he pushed and the businesses that he destroyed? And yet he was somehow the hero until we discovered that he's not just abusive to media or political opponents or victims' families like Janice Dean, but actually sexually abusive to his employees. Nobody's surprised by that. Absolutely nobody.
Well, and let me ask you this. Letitia James was the first person, the New York Attorney General, she was the first person to come forward and say his numbers were officially wrong. And she kind of, it was actually her breaking from the Democrat pack that actually began to have awareness raised, and eventually his office was forced to confront and admit that they had fudged the numbers. Now she has basically gotten him to relinquish all rights on who she names as an investigator into. I mean, come on, Carol, how classic right. Cuomo was this over the weekend? He's like, let me appoint my own investigator, and
right.
like,
good
no, we're not that. Buying that.
Yeah.
But how do you think she's gonna? Do you think she's gonna remain independent and kind of pursue an actual line of justice on these two very important issues?
I do think so. I think she's got her eye on his job, and I think there's a very good chance that we will see a Governor James in the next few years. I am generally not a fan, but she's doing the right thing here, and she's pursuing him pretty hard. And I think that that's like, you know, you said he admitted that they fudged the numbers. They actually have not admitted that. They only admitted that to fellow Democrats. They have not come out and said it yet to the
that's
public.
True.
They have not apologized for anybody, for any of the deaths. They have not done any of that. So I would like to see resolution on all of that. And I'm not positive that we will, but, you know, if these sexual harassment allegations do anything, I hope that they really expose the kind of person he is and the kind of person that we've been taught to idolize in the last year for no reason.
Coming up, from one governor's trouble to the other.
Where we had businesses open and closed in California 4 and 5 times because of the conflicting metrics and moving the goalposts, indoor dining, outdoor dining, you know, closing down outdoor playgrounds.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over 2 decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The recall effort of California Governor Gavin Newsom has passed the first big hurdle. It looks like they have the required number of signatures to put the issue before the voters. Should Governor Newsom be recalled? And if so, who should replace him? They're still gathering more signatures as organizers understand a good percentage will be tossed out. It's part of the game. But the recall comes with a second question, like I mentioned. Should voters choose to oust the governor, who will replace him? Many have suggested a popular California Republican, Kevin Faulkner, the former mayor of San Diego. Faulkner joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. If Gavin Newsom is subject to a recall, are you going to run on the second question of who should replace him?
I am, and he is. This recall is going to qualify here. There's no doubt in my mind. We're up to about 1.8 million signatures. So I think you probably know the threshold. to qualify is 1.5. So I think by the time the deadline hits, it's going to be March 17th, we'll probably have about 2 million signatures to recall Gavin Newsom. And by the way, Hugh, this is Democrats, independents, Republicans, people that are ready for a change, and they're ready for a change now in California.
So people need to keep circulating those petitions. But my question to you next is, when do you expect that recall vote to happen? I remember very well the Gray Davis Arnold Schwarzenegger recall, and it's a two-part question. Should Gavin be recalled? And if that is a yes, then it's who gets the most votes. When do Californians vote on that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That is the process. Our best estimate on when this will happen, because the legislature's allowed some leeway, is likely this November or December that we will have the recall election in California.
Is there any way they can punt it to March of next year, which I've seen floated as a way for Governor Newsom to gain some time?
I've heard folks talking about that, Hugh, but I think the difficulty is going to be it will not be ready in California in terms of the census requirements for next year. So I think they'll look at any way possible to delay it. But again, I think when you run all the math and numbers and everything they're able to do to delay without messing around with the census, it's likely November or December.
How will you explain to people why they should vote to recall Gavin before we get to the second question, which is why they should pick you?
Well, I'll tell you, the frustration, Hugh, and the anger, you can't underestimate it in California because of the governor's continued, not just missteps, but just absolute failures of leadership. The fact, Hugh, that our state, and we're very proud of our innovation and entrepreneurs in California, was dead last on the vaccine rollout. The fact that our public schools in California still aren't open, and I say that not just as a candidate for governor, but as a father with two kids who aren't in the classroom who should be. There's no a computer screen is no substitute for a classroom. And so as we continue, and the fact that his entire response to you was not, I repeat, not based on science, where we had businesses open and closed in California 4 and 5 times because of the conflicting metrics and moving the goalposts, indoor dining, outdoor dining, closing down outdoor playgrounds with no rhyme or reason. And so that's why you're seeing Californians in record numbers. There's about 100,000 signatures a week now on this petition because the governor is just out of touch and he's not getting it done.
So, Mayor Faulkner, give me some mechanics. After it qualifies, how long do people have to declare that they are a candidate to replace him?
About 90 days, Hugh, in terms of folks to jump in. And we expect, as it was last time, as you rightfully mentioned, with Gray Davis, I'm sure we'll have a lot of candidates to file. There was over 100 last time. Pretty easy to get your name on there. But, look, I think that what Californians are going to be looking for is somebody like myself who has the experience of running the second largest city in our state as mayor of San Diego, and somebody who actually got results, unlike the virtue signaling that we see from Gavin Newsom. I mean, the fact to you that we were the only city in California that actually reduced homelessness by double digits the last 2 years, as contrasted by, unfortunately, virtually every other big city in California that has seen an explosion of homelessness. The fact that I paved half of our streets in San Diego as mayor, didn't raise taxes to do it, focused on infrastructure and doing it the right way. And I guess lastly, I would mention when it comes to public safety, somebody who understood as mayor that if we don't have a safe city, if we don't have a safe state, we don't have anything. I did not defund the police as mayor. And yes, Hugh, I had hundreds of protesters outside of my personal residence this past summer yelling every name of the book and, defund the police. I increased the budget by 7% because I want our men and women with the badge to have the tools and the training and the support to make them make our neighborhoods safe. So I think those are a few issues of contrast that I'm looking forward to in terms of the failures of Gavin Newsom.
Big tech, Google, Amazon, Twitter, they've increased their efforts to censor content with which they disagree. They label opposition hate speech and thereby grant themselves the right or the duty to bury the content. Books, movies, videos, even platforms have vanished from view. Ryan Anderson, now with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, was one of the first victims. He discussed the fallout with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer out of Chicago.
So, Ryan, have you reached out to Amazon and asked them why they're erasing your book?
Yeah, so my publisher did, and it took them 2 days before they finally got back to us, and all they will say is that it now violates their content policy. A book that didn't violate their content policy for 3 years now does violate their content policy. They won't tell us which aspects of the content policy the book violates. They won't tell us which page of the book, you know, committed the offense. So this is more or less just, you know, the largest e-commerce retailer in the world flexing its muscles, right? This isn't a, there's no transparency here. There's no actual communication. It's just that they're the biggest business in the world on these issues, selling these materials, selling books and other goods over the internet, and they can do what they want to do. That's more or less the message we're receiving.
Well, I mean, I guess you're probably not surprised by it, particularly after the treatment that Abigail Shire got for her book on the same topic, from a bit of a different angle, but same topic. So, you know, you got in under the wire, and now they got to claw back and purge you along with her.
I mean, my thought here is that the timing is awfully suspicious, that when President Trump was in office, when the Republicans controlled the Senate, when Bill Barr was the attorney general, they were reluctant to do something like this. And now with a change of power, both at the White House and at the Attorney General's office and in the Senate. And last week was the House vote of the Equality Act, right? So the timing of this just makes everything a little suspicious. And we'll have to see how it plays out.
Elucidate for our listeners the implications of the Equality Act from your perspective. This is more than just about sort of ideology or discrimination law. It has real world implications for churches and schools and private institutions.
Yeah, so look, the Equality Act, it's billed as, we're going to protect people from unjust discrimination, but that's not actually what it does. It's not a shield protecting vulnerable minorities from unjust discrimination. It's a sword persecuting people who believe the truth about human nature. Right? So if you believe that we are created male and female, and that male and female are created for each other, under the Equality Act, you will now be a civil rights offender.
To hear the entire conversation with Ryan Anderson, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up, now they've come for Dr. Seuss.
We weren't told or informed that we were reading racist and supremacist material.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. History will not be kind to cancel culture. How could it be? What we are seeing is a new sort of puritanism of the woke age. To survive, you must adhere to a new and unusual set of ideals. Your past is up for detailed scrutiny, there's no forgiveness, and there are some pretty odd standards. Despite all that, many were still surprised with the latest target, Dr. Seuss. Seth Leibson explains the latest on 960 The Patriot in Phoenix, Arizona.
The cancel culture has now come to the Cat in the Hat, to Dr. Seuss. I read today from Deadline.com. In Virginia, they do not like green eggs and ham or Dr. Seuss. The good Dr. Seuss, a.k.a. Theodore Geisel, has been dropped from the annual Read Across America event, a national day to encourage reading. Dr. Seuss books have long been a staple of the program. Dr. Seuss, a major supplier of content for television and film through such characters as The Grinch, The Cat in the Hat, and Horton Hears a Who, was banned because his books allegedly have, quote, strong racial undertones, close quote, according to the school system. We now know decades and decades and decades of being raised on Dr. Seuss that we weren't told or informed that we were reading racist and supremacist material. They are now problematic, his books, for people of color. Few people have done as much for education and literacy in America as Theodore Geisel, and few childhoods have been better affected by fewer authors than Dr. Seuss until today. A beloved author and cartoonist adored by children and adults alike, until woke warriors found that tragedy of tragedies, he got the smile from the cat looking at an elegant black woman in an elevator. Let me read you this from a great profile in The New Yorker a decade ago. You know, The New Yorker. Pretty well-credentialed, highbrow magazine. Also liberal. Geisel's breakthrough came in 1937 when an old Dartmouth friend, an editor at Vanguard Press, persuaded his boss to publish And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, a book that 27 other publishing houses had turned down. This was followed by a steady stream of Dr. Seuss books, including the great political trilogy, The 500 Hats of Bartholomew Cubbins, The King's Stilts, Bartholomew and the Oobleck, and two classic studies of identity, Horton Hatches the Egg and Horton Hears a Who. And so in 1954, when John Hersey published a piece in Life magazine deploring the books used in public schools to teach children how to read, he called them, quote, pallid primers with abnormally courteous, unnatural, clean boys and girls, close quote. He mentioned Dr. Seuss, however, as one of the imaginative geniuses whom publishers might turn to in the hope of enriching the books they produced for schools. In 1955, one of those publishers took John Hersey's advice. This was William Spalding, director of education at Houghton Mifflin. Spalding had read Hersey's article. He had also read a bestseller called Why Johnny Can't Read. The author was Rudolf Franz Flesch. His point wasn't just that Dick and Jane and Alice and Jerry readers were boring. His point was that they were based on flawed teaching, flawed pedagogy. And it was the theory of word recognition, the idea that children learn words by memorizing them. Flesch argued that this was an absurd way to teach reading, since it left the child without resources when confronted with an unfamiliar word. The correct method, Flesch believed, was phonics, teaching children the sounds that letters and groups of letters make. Ultimately, of course, we do memorize words. We don't stop to sound them out. But Flesch thought that people could get to that stage a lot faster if they started with phonics. Phonics. Anyone remember phonics? The story goes on. Flesch claimed that American children advanced much more slowly in reading than European children did, and he suggested that the failure of the schools was a threat to democracy and the American dream, since it deprived poor and middle-class children of the quality of education available to the affluent who were studying phonics. Flesch also asserted that first and second graders in our public schools are not taught to read at all, as shown by the fact that there isn't a single book on the market that they can manage to read by themselves. And this hint of an unexploited class of consumers is undoubtedly what inspired Spalding to invite Theodore Geisel to dinner. Write me a story that first graders can't put down, he told him. I worked on the book for 9 months, throwing it across the room and letting it hang for a while, but I finally got it done. That book was Cat in the Hat. It was a tour de force, and it killed Dick and Jane. In time, children's books would have tags on their front cover. You may even remember them. Cat's image, with the cat in the hat's image, saying this is an I can read book. Because these books helped children with phonics and taught them how to read. I know it did for me. Too bad we're going to be more dumb now, because of the woke. This is how you lose a culture. This is how you become less literate. This is how you lose a country. Because someone saw someone in an elevator some 66 years ago and thought it a bad thing.
Coming up.
If America succeeds, the left fails.
Dennis Prager, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Dr. Seuss wasn't the only surprise victory for cancel culture this week. Hasbro had a big announcement about Mr. Potato Head. Had any of you been troubled by Mr. Potato Head? But such are the times we live in. And don't expect things to get better anytime soon. Here's my friend and colleague, Dennis Prager.
Hasbro announced that they're dropping Mr. Potato Head. None of us is sure why. Whom does that offend? I want you to think about that for a moment. Whom does that offend? The only people I can imagine being offended by Mr. Potato Head are those who deny that there are any misters. Mr. Potato Head should not be Mr. Potato Head, but should have no gender or sex, which is the appropriate term. I want to explain something to you about the left so you will understand the world in which we live. America achieved such a wonderful status of freedom, opportunity, etc., that the left was confronted with an existential threat. America was an existential threat to the left. If America succeeds as a Judeo-Christian, capitalist, heteronormative country, in other words, nuclear family, without in any way speaking ill or hurting a gay person, that's not the same thing. I'll explain that later. If America succeeds, the left fails. This is a binary moment. Either the left succeeds or America succeeds. They cannot both succeed. So what you do is, since there is so little to truly complain about, the left, for all of my life, has invented issues. Mr. Potato Head not allowing biological males who identify as females to race against females, heterosexual AIDS, these were things that were largely invented. What they do is they invent stuff, like the race. America is racist. America is so little racist that they make up things called microaggressions. Microaggressions are statements that are perfectly innocuous and sometimes even noble, but which they have now declared to be racist. There is always a hysteria, something I've pointed out all the time. The reason that there's always a hysteria is there is no other way for the left to ruin America. By constantly telling you in a controlled press and controlled schools and controlled colleges and controlled Hollywood, by constantly telling you that there is some spectacular threat looming, they can get you to believe that America needs to be transformed, not merely improved. What was wrong with Mr. Potato Head? What was wrong with Aunt Jemima? What was wrong with the Cleveland Indians? But they're made into big deals. Is America one iota better because there's no Aunt Jemima product any longer, or Uncle Ben's rice, or the Cleveland Indians? Are Indians better off not being celebrated? Don't teams name themselves after those they celebrate? Some activist group wants, what is it, Chrysler, to drop the Cherokee label on. What is wrong about that? Virtually every American who hears the name Cherokee thinks it must be strong, correct? What else do you think of? Do you name a car after, I mean, is there a car named the Pacifist? And I was thinking, reading this column, which has the brainwashed idiocy, they repeat lines talking about the people like Ben Shapiro and others. They are incapable of grasping the scientific truth. It's now scientific truth that gender is fluid, exists on a spectrum, and is not necessarily a function of genitalia. It's not only a function of genitalia, it's a function of chromosomes. Do you see how the left destroys science? They're destroying math. For this alone, Bill Gates' name will go down as a mockery. $1 million from his foundation to groups that are teaching that math does not have a right answer, because the assumption that math has a right answer is white supremacist. Would Microsoft have hired people who didn't believe that there was a right answer in math? Just out of curiosity. You see, all of this is make-believe. It's a make-believe world. Because if there aren't crises to be engaged in, battles to be fought, these people have no meaning in their lives. It's a soulless world, the world of the left. And literally, it is soulless. There was a piece in the New York Times. It was incredible. A professor of philosophy wrote a piece that we are no different at all from animals. In fact, we are essentially squirrels. In fact, he ends it by saying the squirrels are better than us. They can jump onto trees better. That was an important point, yes. It's a soulless world, and it needs to fill its emptiness with meaning. So the left finds meaning in these battles. Potato head. Sex doesn't exist. Gender is fluid. Your identification with it might be fluid, but it isn't fluid. Any more than math answers are fluid. But that's the whole point. Everything is fluid on the left. So tell me, would Native Americans have done better if there was no Apache helicopter? Or the Indians, or the Seminoles, and actually, it's actually bad for Indians. They were deeply commemorated, remembered, and placed into the American consciousness thanks to all of these names. But the left hurts every group that it claims to defend.
Coming up, a teachers' union boss puts their child in a private school.
Every single position that a conservative advocates, we also live. Every single position that a Democrat advocates is inconsistent with how they want to live.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook. And in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week,
the House of Representatives passes the Equality Act.
There's nothing equal in this act.
Get analysis.
I feel like I'm participating in an Orwellian experiment where I'm calling Equality Act something that it really isn't. It's an inequality act.
The Lifetime Channel drops the Christian program Truth That Transforms.
We have just lost about 65% of our broadcast platform by them refusing to accept our programming and exercising what is no question is viewpoint discrimination.
And Amazon drops a book from Ryan Anderson.
These are not your grandparents' liberals we're dealing with anymore.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. In some parts of the country, schools have returned to normal for some time. The science indicated school was safe for children. The results have proven that that theory was true. But in other parts of the country, especially so in big cities where teachers' unions are the most powerful, schools remain locked down, closed. And that led to a shocking incident in the city of Berkeley. Salem host Charlie Kirk explained.
Berkeley teacher union head says all schools should be closed, Berkeley, California, saying it's unsafe to send kids to school. At the same time, it has now been revealed that he has been dropping off his son at an in-person private school. So the head of the Berkeley Teacher Union says shut down the schools, not safe, but it's safe enough for my kid. And there's a deeper point to all of this, and we've talked about this at great length. Every single position that a conservative advocates, we also live. Every single position that a Democrat advocates, is inconsistent with how they want to live. For example, I'm okay with building walls around people's homes. I'm also okay with building a southern border wall. I'm okay with people owning firearms. In fact, I'm okay being protected by firearms. I'm okay with school choice and sending children to different schools. Whereas Democrats, they say, we want to shut down the schools because it's unsafe. And his name is Matt Meyer. Matt Meyer says it's unsafe, but by the way, it's safe enough for my child, so I'm going to send him to preschool. Democrats say they don't like walls, but they're happy to build one around the U.S. Capitol. Democrats say that they think climate change is an existential threat, but they're happy to go around the North American continent on private jets. Since the Democrats' worldview and the left's worldview is inconsistent with human nature, in fact, it's completely at war with human nature, they will always be isolated and singled out as hypocrites. Same with Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom says, keep the restaurants closed. Meanwhile, I'm going to go dine at French Laundry. Ron DeSantis says, open the schools, open the restaurants. And then he goes and has a beer at the Super Bowl. And no one attacks him because he is then living the worldview that he's implementing in the state of Florida. So this guy, Matt Meyer, was caught on camera saying that we must keep public schools closed, but my child can have private in-school instruction. Typical for the Democrats. They want to have rules that they live under, but that you don't have to live under.
For the remainder of Charlie Kirk's talk on schools, go to townhallreview.com. Thanks for joining us on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer Charlie Richards, David Bouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Harley Eide, Ben Brigman, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.